Kind of.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Good evening.
I have to remember where I am.
No. Well, I just got back home, so made it in time.
Welcome home.
Thank you.
To start the process, and right now you're the only one on, but we'll see what happens
okay,
by the time we finish.
All right, and I'll mute.
Okay. Please join me in saying the Anabekoa. Anabekoa, Gedula Chimincha, Tatir, Serira, Alkatimo Yitak Sadi. Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagvenu Taharenu Nora Kufre Shayan Sintet Nun Nadibor Dorshe Yehudcha Kevavat Shamrem Nun Gimel Dalet Kachin Barchem Tacharem Rachame Sitkacha Tamid Gamlem Etet Resh Saditav Gimel Hasin Kadosh Berov Tuvcha Nael Adata Het kuf bet, het nun ayin. Yachid geyeh, lamcha penei, zokre kidushatah, yud gimel lamed, hei zayin kuf. Shavatenu kabel, ushmatziyakatenu, yodeya talumot, shin kufal. We have brought the energy of creation into our space. We're now going to separate between the right column energy and the left column energy of that creation. And we'll do this utilizing the 13 attributes of wisdom, of mercy. Adonai Yohei Wahei, Adonai Yohei Wahei, El Rachum Vechanun, Erech Apaim, Verav Chesed Be'emet, Notze Chesed La'alafim, Notze Awon Wafesha, Vechata'a V'nakei. We'll now connect to the Parasha from in the Zohar from the Parasha Yitro, Pasuk 29, that gives us or connects us to the energy of certainty. We'll start with a L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud Kudsha Barichu Ishkinte Bit Hilu Urchimu Hilu Hilu Urchimu Le'achda L'shem Yud He Bevav He B'yichuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah, Lasok Torah Mitzvah, Vayhi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Konenei Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Konenehu. Rabbi Abba Amar, Bekama Atar, Taneinan Dekudsha Barichu, Koma Diyaved Leila Witata. Kolaihu kishot v'yovada dikshot v'leit lach mila b'yalma divaye barnash v'dach yaleya mineya ulan haga v'ya kalana v'hakulu ovada dikshot inun v'kolaih tzirich. Be Alma I'm having difficulty with my computer. So we're going to say the eighth verse of the Anabakoach to ground any excess energy that we may have drawn and just go to the handout. So please say the eighth verse of the Anabakoach in a whisper. Today's class is an essay by Rabbi Ashlag. We're continuing the same essay that we've been reading. So you will find the handout on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix. That's in row 16, the right-hand column of the Revealed Wisdom Matrix. When you open up that link, just scroll down to Class 32D, or Essay 32D. And that is the essay entitled An Introduction to Panim Meirot, Umas Birot. And we are starting at Section 14. Now we have found the opening to the above study regarding the four sects, mercy, righteousness, truth, and peace, which negotiated with the Creator regarding man's creation. These angels are servants of man's soul, hence he negotiated with them, since the whole act of creation was created according to them, as each and every soul consists of 10 sephirot in the Or Panimi and the Or Makif. Mercy is the Or Panimi of the first nine of the soul. Righteousness is the Or Panimi of the Malchut of the soul. Truth is the Or Panimi, the Or Makif of the soul. And we have already said that Or Panimi and Or Makif are opposites, since the Or Panimi is drawn by the law of the illumination of the Kav, which is prevented from appearing at the point of the Tzimtzum, which is the Gadlut form of reception, the large form, the adult form of receiving. The Or Makif extends from Or En Sof, which surrounds all the worlds, since there in En Sof, great and small are equal. For this reason, the Or Makif shines and bestows upon the point of Tzimtzum, two, much less for Malchut. Since they are opposites, two Kelim are needed. This is because the Or Panimi illuminates in the upper nine. Even to Malchut, it shines only according to the law of the upper nine, and not at all to her own self. However, the Or Makif shines in the Kelim that extends specifically from the point of the Tzimtzum, which is called the outer Kli. Now you can understand why truth is called a seal. It is a borrowed name from a seal at the edge of a letter, at the end of the matters. However, it asserts them and gives them validity. Without the seal, they are worthless, and the whole text is wasted. It is the same with the Or Makif, which bestows upon the point of the Tzimtzum, which is the Gadlut measure of reception, until it equalizes its form with its maker in bestowal. Indeed, this is the purpose of all the limited worlds, upper and lower. The protest of truth regarding man's creation is its claim that he is all lies. This is so because from the perspective of the Creator, man does not have an outer kli, which he needs to draw from the point of Tzimtzum, as she has already been separated from his light. Thus the angels of truth could not help man obtain the Or Makif. All the limited worlds, upper and lower, were created solely for that completion, and this man must be its only subject. But since this man is unfit for his role, they are all abyss and falsehood, and the labor in them is useless. It is the opposite with the angels of mercy and righteousness, which belong specifically to the Or Panimi of the soul. Because he has nothing of the vacant space, they could bestow upon him all the lights of Neshama abundantly in the most sublime perfection. Thus they were happy to benefit him, and wholeheartedly agreed to man's creation, because they are Netzachod and Yesod that enter by Zivug de Haka'a, which is binding by striking. They belong to the half of the Or Makif from the perspective of the Or Chotzer in it. The angels of peace claim that he is all strife. In other words, how will he receive the Or Makif? In the end, they cannot come in the same subject with the Or Panimi, as they are opposite from each other, meaning all strife. The Or Makif is discerned by two, the future Or Chozer and the future Or Makif. The outer kli for the Or Chozer is the Masach, and the outer kli for the Or Makif is the Aviyut of Beshina Dalit, the fourth discernment itself, namely the stony heart. You find that Adam HaRishon lacked only the outer kli, which belongs to the angels of truth. He did not lack the outer kli, belonging to the angels of peace. Hence they agreed to the creation and claim that he is all strife, meaning that the Or Yashar cannot enter the inner kli, since they are opposites. Now that's the end of section 14. A lot of these words we've discussed before, and we have to realize that I can't just constantly translate the Kabbalistic terms. So are there any specific questions to help understand this section? Section 15. Now we have been granted the understanding of the rest of the verses in the sin of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, which are most profound. Our sages who disclosed a portion of them concealed 10 portions with their words. As a foreword it is written, and they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. Know that clothing means an outer kli. Hence, the text proceeds to demonstrate the reason for the sin of the tree of knowledge, as it is written in the verse, libel is terrible for the children of man, for in libel you come upon him. This means that his sin had been prepared in advance, and this is the meaning of the words that Adam and his wife did not have an outer kli at the moment of creation, but only inner kli Kelim, which extend from the system of Kedusha. Hence, they were not ashamed. This is why they did not feel their absence, as shame refers to a sensation of absence. It is known that the sensation of absence is the first reason for the fulfillment of the deficiency. It is as one who feels one's illness and is willing to receive the medication. However, when one does not feel that he is ill, he will certainly avoid all medications. Indeed, this task is for the outer kli to do. Since it is in the construction of the body and is empty of light, as it comes from the vacant space, it begets the sensation of emptiness and dearth in it, by which one becomes ashamed. Hence, one is compelled to return to fill the absence and draw the lacking, or makif, which is about to fill that kli. This is the meaning of the verse, and they were both naked, the man and his wife, of the outer kli. For this reason, they were not ashamed, since they did not feel their absence. In that manner, they are devoid of the purpose for which they were created. Yet we must thoroughly understand the sublimity of that man, made by the hands of the Creator. Also, his wife, to whom the Creator has administered greater intelligence than him, as they have written in the interpretation to the verse, "And the Lord made the rib." Thus, how did they fail and became as fools, not knowing to beware of the serpent's shyness, slyness? On the other hand, that serpent of which the text testifies that it was more cunning than all the animals of the field, how did it utter such folly and emptiness that should they eat off the fruit of the tree of knowledge, they would be turned to Hashem? Moreover, how did the folly settle in their hearts? Also, it is said below that they did not eat because of their desire to become Hashem, but simply because the tree is good to eat. This is seemingly a beastly desire. This is the end of section 15. And the question, this whole section 15 is question after question about the creation of Adam and Eve and about the eating of the sin, which this section tells us the sin is not a sin. It was not in control. It was not the fault of Adam or Eve. It was ordained that there would be a sin so that the universe would fall spiritually and, based upon the fall, become the world of correction. All of that was an unwritten commentary. I hope it's clear for you. Section 16. We must know the nature of the two kinds of discernments customary for us. The first discernment is called discernment of good and bad. The second discernment is called discernment of true and false. This means that the Creator has imprinted a discerning force in each creature that executes everything that is good for it and brings it to its desired perfection. The first discernment is the active physical force. It operates using the sensation of bitter and sweet, which loathes and repels the bitter form, since it is bad for it, and loves and attracts the sweet, because it is good for it. This operating force is sufficient in the still, the vegetable, and the animate, in reality, to bring them to their desired perfection. This is an unwritten commentary. This metaphor of bitter and sweet is excellent to understand what happened with the fall of Adam and Chava. Because good and evil in the spiritual worlds are clearly separate from each other. And the creatures in those worlds, which are us and other lower forms of life, those creatures can discern, can tell the difference of what is good for them and what is not good for them, what is bad for them. But that is after the fall, the physical world, we have this idea of bitter and sweet, which in our tongue, we can taste bitter and sweet at the same time. That's why it's a good metaphor. We call it sweet and sour sauce from China, Chinese food. It tastes sweet and it tastes bitter. In the upper world, bitter and sweet, bitter is not good for the creature, and sweet is good for the creature. But in our world, everything is mixed up. And this metaphor helps you understand that. Continuing to read. Atop the three lower worlds of the inanimate, the plant, and the animal, atop them is the human species, in which the Creator instilled a rational operating force. It operates in sorting the above second discernment, rejecting falsehood and emptiness, with loathing to the point of nausea, and attracts true matters and every benefit with great love. This discernment is called discernment of true and false. It is implemented solely in the human species, each according to his own measure. Know that this second acting force was created and came to man because of the serpent. At creation, he had only the first active force from the discernments of good and bad, which was sufficient for him at that time. Let me explain it to you in an allegory. If the righteous were rewarded according to their good deeds, and the wicked punished according to their bad deeds in this physical world, Kedusha would be determined for us in the reality of sweet and good, and the Sitra Achra would be defined in the reality of bad and bitter. In that state, the mitzvah of choice would reach us, as it is written, "Behold, I have set before thee the sweet and the bitter. Therefore choose sweet." Thus all the people would be guaranteed to achieve perfection, for they would certainly run from the sin, as it is bad for them. They would be occupied in his mitzvot day in and day out, ceaselessly, like today's fools regarding the bodily matters and its filth, since it is good and sweet in them. So was the matter of Adam HaRishon when he created him and put him into the Garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it. Our sages interpreted to dress it as the positive mitzvot, and to keep it are the negative mitzvot. His positive mitzvot were to eat and delight with all the trees of the garden, And his negative mitzvot were to not eat from the tree of knowledge of good and bad. The positive mitzvot were sweet and nice, and the negative mitzvot were retirement from the bitter fruit that is as hard as death. Not surprisingly, these cannot be called mitzvot and labor. We find the likes of that in our present chores, where through the pleasures of Shabbat and good days, we are rewarded with sublime Kedusha. And we are also rewarded for retiring from reptiles and insects and everything that one finds loathsome. You find that the choice in the work of Adam HaRishon was by way of therefore choose sweet. It follows that the physical palate alone was sufficient for all he needed to know what the Creator commanded and what he did not command. That's the end of the section. Are there any questions? Section 17. Now we can understand the serpent's craftiness, which our sages added and notified us that Samach Mem clothed in it, because its words were very high. It started with, "Yea, hath God said, ye shall not eat of any tree of the garden," meaning it began to speak with her, since the woman was not commanded by the Creator. Hence it asked her about the modes of scrutiny, meaning, how do you know that the tree of knowledge had been prohibited? Perhaps all the fruits of the garden were forbidden for you also. And the woman said, "Of the fruit of the trees of the garden we may eat, yet ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die." There are two great precisions here. A, the touching was never forbidden. Hence, why did she add to the prohibition? B, did she doubt the words of the Creator? The Creator said, "Thou shalt surely die," and the woman said, "Lest ye die." Could it be that she did not believe the words of the Creator, even prior to the sin? Yet the woman answered it according to the serpent's question. She knew what the Creator had prohibited, that all the trees of the garden are sweet and nice and good to eat. However, she was already close to touching that tree inside the garden, and tasted in it a taste that is as hard as death. She herself had proven that by her own observation there is fear of death, even from mere touching. For this reason she understood the prohibition further than she had heard from her husband, as there is none so wise as experience. "Lest ye die" concerns the touching. The answer must have been quite sufficient, for who would interfere and deny another's taste? However, the serpent contradicted her and said, "Ye shall not surely die, for God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened." We must make the precision concerning the matter of the opening of the eyes to this place. Indeed, it informed her of a new thing beyond her. It proved to them that it is folly to think that the Creator created something harmful and detrimental in his world. Thus, with respect to the Creator, it is certainly not a bad or harmful thing. Instead, that bitterness that you will taste in it, when even close to touching, is only on your part, since this eating is to notify you of the height of your merit. Thus it is additional kedusha that you need during the act, so your sole aim will be to bring contentment to your maker, to keep the aim for which you were created. For this reason it seems evil to you, so you will understand the additional kedusha required of you. For in the day that thou eatest thereof, meaning if the act is in kedusha and purity as clear as day, then ye shall be as God, knowing good and evil. This means that as it is certainly sweet to the Creator and completely equal, so the good and bad will be to you, in complete equivalence, sweet and gentle. It is still possible to doubt the credibility of the serpent, since the Creator did not tell it that himself. Therefore, the serpent first said, "To for God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened." This means that it is not necessary for the Creator to notify you of that, since he knows that if you pay attention to that, to eat on the side of Kedusha, your eyes shall be opened by themselves. To understand the measure of his greatness, you will feel wondrous sweetness and gentleness in him. Hence he does not need to let you know. As for that, he instilled in you the scrutinizing force that you may know what is to your benefit by yourselves. It is written right after that, "And when the woman saw the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes," this means that she did not rely on his words, but went and examined with her own mind and her own understanding, and sanctified herself with additional kedusha, to bring contentment to the Creator in order to complete the aim desired of her, and not at all for herself. At that time her eyes were opened, as the serpent had said, and the woman saw that the tree was good for food. In other words, by seeing that it was a delight to the eyes, before she even touched it, she felt great sweetness and lust. When her eyes saw by themselves that she had not seen such a desirable thing in all of the trees of the garden, she also learned that the tree is good for knowledge, meaning that there is far more to crave and covet in this tree than in all the trees of the garden. This refers to knowing that they were created for this act of eating, and that this is the whole purpose, as the serpent had told her. After all these certain observations, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat. And she gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. The text accurately writes "with her," meaning with the pure intention to only bestow and not for her own need. This is the meaning of the words, "And she gave also unto her husband with her in Kedusha." I am adding, there are other similar explanations in other sages' writings. There are some minor differences between the explanations, yet nothing significant or important is discussed. And I am explaining. The salient points are as follows. Adam and Eve were supposed to eat from the tree of knowledge at some future time. Many sages say it was to have been after that first Shabbat, or perhaps during that first Shabbat. Nothing the Samach Mem said to Chava is untrue. Chava was told something called a fence around the Torah. She expanded that fence to a larger distance. Chava verified that the tree smelled good and therefore knew it was good to eat. That's the end of this section, the end of the handout for this. There's a second part to the end handout, and we will start that next week. Does anyone have any questions? Did you all? Shalom. We will have continuing study of the Tanit Dibur tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. West Coast time. We will have a mini Zohar class tomorrow at 4:30 West Coast time, and at 7 o'clock West Coast time, a Tikkuni Zohar class. Shalom to everyone.
Shalom.
Shalom. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.